Because 100 years ago, none of us would have been able to take a hot shower before we came to church. Hot showers is one of the most simplistic pleasures of modern day life. I don't know about you, but there's nothing that feels better after you're outside cutting wood or working all day in the cold. And I remember my years of construction, and I would come in and I would be freezing cold because I'd been outside all day long from 6 o'clock in the morning until 4 or 5 o'clock at night. And I love to come in and just get in that hot shower and feel that hot water just slowly warm back up my body. Today, with what scientists tell us that study the human race, that we have had over 100 billion people on this planet from its very inception of recorded history, so we could go from creation, from Adam and Eve until today. There have been over 100 billion people live on this planet, and today we are in the top single percentile of all history in the blessings and the amenities that humanity has experienced. The health of our children today, based off of 100 years ago, the health of our children has skyrocketed. The health, our personal health has skyrocketed. Our life expectancy has gone from 40 to 50 to 60 to 70 to 80, and it's not uncommon today to find people that are into their hundreds. All across the globe, life expectancies have risen, yet life has never been objectively better, and yet at the same time, subjectively worse. The basis of humanity has always had a struggle with contentment, which almost always leads us down the path to discontentment. We have the most stuff, the highest level of wealth that this world has ever seen, and yet we are a society, a nation, a world in discontent. So as we get into our series passage today, the Apostle Paul is writing to the church in Philippi. This was some close to 2,000 years ago that he penned these words, and he addressed this exact subject of discontentment and contentment. He says in Philippians 4, 11 and 12, I'm not saying this because I am in need. So Paul is telling us that I really don't have any immediate needs in this life. I find that very ironic because he's writing this letter from a Roman prison. He says, I don't have any needs, for I have learned to be content in whatever the circumstances. Hey, folks, I'm not getting a hot shower in here, but I'm learning to be content. I'm not getting hot meals and warm meals in here, but I'm learning to be content. I have to use the facilities as the corner of my cell, and I have to live with that every day, but I'm content. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, rather well-fed or hungry, rather living in plenty or in want. So as we started this series, so far we have covered these points on what is contentment. You can go back. This is number part three of this. There's part two in our introductory series, part one. You can go back and listen to these online. We talked about what is contentment. How can I be content? We found out that contentment is something that is learned. Where does contentment reside? Where does it live? Anybody remember that? Just shout it out. Anybody remember? It's in the heart. It's in the heart. It's a heart issue. Contentment is of the will. And we also talked about the secret of staying content, continually staying content, is continually remembering the cross of Jesus Christ. So we're going to move along in our study today. In Philippians chapter 3, verse 13, Paul states, "Brothers, I do not consider myself to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and reaching forward to what is ahead." So the first point I want to cover this morning as we get into today's lesson is forgetting what is behind, letting go of the past. Letting go of the past. We cannot hope to ever gain contentment in this life while holding on to past failures, past mistakes, whether they're others or whether they're ours. The key to getting past that level of discontentment in your life is to take the past and bury it. Yes, you can take lessons that are learned. I've learned many lessons in my past, and I'm going to cover some of that in today's lesson. But we must not hold on to past failures and mistakes, whether they're ours or whether they're others. There's a difference between ignoring past wrongs and forgetting them. Most of us, we just kind of have a tendency to kind of ignore them. Very rarely do we ever forget them. You see, forgetting means that we work through the process of forgiving others and following God's forgiveness to cover us. Remember that short passage of Scripture, "All have sinned." Let's just put this into a little bit closer perspective. All have offended somebody, and all have been offended by somebody. So get over it. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We need to let go of such statements that begin with, "I should have." I've listened to a lot of conversations over the years as a pastor, and I have people say, "Well, Pastor, this is what I should have done. Pastor, if I only would have done this, or if they hadn't done that." But you see, true forgiveness requires us to see things or see the wrongs clearly, to articulate them and release them to God, and then walk away from it. The process, it doesn't happen just like that simple. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes us a while to get to the point of being willing to forgive someone who has wronged us. We can't always do it on our own. Sometimes we get caught up in this syndrome of "woe is me. They wronged me. They did me wrong. I deserve better." And we can't always do it on our own. We need each other. But without it, we will never have a contented heart. I remember years ago, sitting at the Country Kitchen restaurant that was over by Easttown Mall with my father, and we were having lunch, and I asked him a question. I expected a bit more of a philosophical, theological type of an answer. But I said, Dad, I said, what is the secret to living for God successfully all of these years that you have lived for God? And as I said, I expected a long, detailed answer, but his reply was really rather simple. He said, well, son, I just determined a long time ago to live for Jesus one day at a time. I don't know if he got that idea from that song, One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus. I don't know, but contentment is literally living for Jesus one day at a time. You see, I'm one of those people that I like to project out. When we go on vacation, we're going to be taking a vacation after Christmas. I'm going to Texas. I'm going to go on a fishing trip and visit my aunt and uncle down there. And when I drive to Texas, every time I drive to Texas, long before I get to certain landmarks, in my mind, I'm projecting those landmarks. They may be hours away, but that's a landmark. My mom and dad, the last time I drove them down to Texas, they projected the entire journey using Cracker Barrels as their landmarks. I didn't realize there were so many Cracker Barrels on the way to Texas. But Paul is writing again to the church in Philippians. Most all of our series is in the book of Philippians. And he writes in Philippians 4:19, and he says, and my God will supply all of your needs according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. You see, here we wait on God, and we need to surrender our timetable and our future to him. We have to surrender our todays. We have to surrender our tomorrows to him. You see, discontentment is often due to a wrong focus in life. Now, I can get extremely focused sometimes and accomplish some things that at times just kind of boggled my mind that I was able to stay focused long enough to accomplish, but then I can also get focused on some things that are the wrong things. And we have a tendency often in life to get focused on the wrong things. If we focus on things, and we can substitute the word stuff in there as well. If we focus on stuff and we focus on others, I can promise you that in your life you will experience discontentment. Listen, understand something. People are flawed. Every last one of us in here has flaws. Get over it. As you look across and see a brother or a sister and you understand and you know their flaws, just understand and realize that they're probably looking back at you. A little advice here. My wife actually shared this with me in a conversation we were talking. And she says, you know, sometimes we just have to look past the flaws and stick with the cause. I think that's a pretty good quote. You see, if we focus on God living each day in the light of his glory, the things of this earth will pale in comparison. We need to find sufficiency. We need to find abundance. We need to be satisfied in Jesus Christ. And Paul states in Philippians 4:13, I am able to do all things through him who strengthens me. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. The term contentment, when you look at contentment, it suggests self-sufficiency. But in the context of this text, it means being at peace with Jesus Christ's sufficiency. We serve a very sufficient God. We could all go to God with the exact same need, and God is so sufficient that he will take care of everybody's need. When his powerful presence is consuming us, we can do all things. But to understand something, Christ has not given us unlimited strength, but we can experience contentment because we are continually being resupplied or a continual recipient of supernatural strength. Our strength comes from him. It doesn't come from me. We can experience contentment. Our human determination may help us to endure adversity and pain, our emotional toughness, this is how God created us, will help us through job loss or financial hardships or relation problems. But only Jesus Christ can generate a contented spirit within us amidst all that is happening around us. Now let's be honest, men. Talk to the men here. We living here in the United States of America. We pretty much have it all. I mean, I look at it this way. If you can't find what you need at Walgreens or CVS, Menards, or Costco, you probably don't need it. We pretty much have it all. I mean, I'm looking at myself. I have an amazing family. I have an amazing daughter. We have one child, Lana. She was like Mary Poppins. She was practically perfect in every way as a child. That's why we stopped. I said, I don't want to mess this thing up. Because I saw what can happen to other people that have a second child. And then the third one comes along. Right, Jim and Amy? And blows it all up. And I'm like, I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. I have an amazing wife. She puts up with me. You see me here. And you see me looking practically perfect. Someone, I came in church Sunday night, and one of our sisters, Gomez, said I was looking a little plump. Not for sure what that means, other than our turkey was really good on Thanksgiving, and it was pleasantly a plump turkey, so that's got to be a good thing. She was making fun of me. I have an amazing daughter, awesome grandkids. I mean, how awesome is Marvin Renvick? Great family, parents, nieces, and nephews. I mean, I got my nephew Carl back there. I look back there, and man, I just see Paul Bunyan all over him. Nieces. I have a great job, great ministry. I work with some incredibly wonderful people. I get to work with like Brother Peter and Sister Jess and Brother Jerry and Brother Phil. My brother Johnny, Brother Fabian, he's here full time on our staff. I have a God who loves me and has been so incredibly patient with me. Loving and gracious, full of mercy. That only a loving, sovereign God can have. What is there to be discontented about? And truly, I have no reason to stand here today and be discontented. But I've not always been this way. At times in my life, my greatest struggle has been with discontentment. I told you I was going to get personal here, so just bear with me. I will get emotional. That's just who I am. But at a time in my life, I found myself extremely restless. Looking at life and thinking that I had everything that I could ever want and ever needed, but yet there was something in me that was just gnawing away and I could not figure out. I thought I knew, but I didn't want to go there. I found myself restless, thinking there has to be more to this life. Lois and I, over the past 20 years, we've gone from a house full of kids, our daughter and all of her friends. Our house has always been a house that anyone is welcome. I can't tell you, well, I can tell you this, since the time we were married up until the last, about 3 years ago, the last person that was living with us moved out. This has been the longest stretch that my wife and I have had to where that we have lived in our home with the two of us. We've always had someone in our home. Empty nesters at 40 years old. I'm 62 years old today. 22 years we've been empty nesters. I remember back in January of 1997, going back a little bit here, I was struggling in my life. I had reached, I guess you could say, the highest level of discontent and dissatisfaction that I could. I was struggling to find direction. I was struggling to talk with God, but I didn't even know how. Didn't know that he even cared or if he even wanted to listen. I was trying to find that happiness. I was discontented with life and I couldn't figure out how to find that pathway back to contentment. I knew the scriptures. I grew up in a pastor's home. My father was a pastor and I knew the scriptures and I knew the word, and yet I could not get there from where I was. I struggle with the reality that over the years I missed so much of my daughter's life trying to make a living. And now she's left home. She's through college. She's married. I miss so much of my daughter's life trying to make a living. I just want to challenge you dads here today. There's nothing more important in your life than taking care of your wife and taking care of your children other than your own soul. Taking care of your wife, taking care of your children. If you don't do it, you will suffer and your family will suffer horribly. I knew that much of my discontentment was due to the lack of a work-life balance. I developed a life of a workaholic simply because I didn't want, I had to drown everything else out. I was obsessed with working and obsessed with stuff, accumulating stuff. The sense of my life revolved around my job. I was a plumber. I was very good at it. Rather than the most important things in my life, which was my faith, my relationship with God, my family, I felt trapped. In the many years of struggles as a backslidden Christian, I just simply wanted to just run away. I told my wife, I said, you know what, we're gonna move, we're gonna get out of here. I want to go somewhere else and I want to start over. I had a conversation with a dear friend in this church, dear couple. They brought it to my attention, and something I've never, ever forgot, that wherever I go, all of my problems, all of my discontent is going to follow me. If you're in a season of discontent here today, I want you to understand God just may be trying to get you to change some things in you. Some heart things, some things in your heart that you won't let go, that you've harbored and you've held on to, and they become part of your identity. God may just be trying to get you to change some of those things in you, and running and going somewhere else is not going to solve that issue. I knew and I felt that God had created me for more than what I was experiencing. That he was bigger and he had yet an unfinished plan for me. If I had my way, I would literally have started all over and embarked on a new career and a different path. But that wasn't what God was looking for. How do you start over? How do you... You have a mortgage, you have family, you have responsibilities. And as I wrestled with discontentment in my life, I was learning to find the perfect peace of God in spite of my circumstances. And perhaps that's what Paul was actually referring to here in Philippians 4. I think there's a holy discontentment that drives us to the feet of Jesus Christ. There's a holy discontentment that can drive us to the cross and to explore God's plan for our lives. Not our plan given to God and say, God, this is my plan for my life. You bless it and stamp it and give it back to me. No, what is God's plan for your life? I think a holy discontentment rises in our lives when we're not moving in the purpose of which God created us for. So how do we deal with this type of discontentment that comes deep in our heart? Something that is of a holy discontentment. As I sat outside on that frigid, cold night in January of 1997 on a big rock sitting out in the middle of our horse pasture, God started something in me that night that has led me all the way to December 1st, 2024, right here, right now, today. If I have learned anything over the years of dealing with personal discontent, holy discontent, I have learned these few simple words, and that is to wait on the Lord. Wait for God. Can I just be honest? I think my my level of discontentment rises from that I am not at times a very patient individual. It amazes me sometimes how much patience I can have with other people, other things, but when it comes to myself, I'm not very patient with myself. I have jumped ahead of God so many times in my life that I have missed out on so many God moments simply because I was impatient and I was going to jump ahead of God. God says, Roy, I'm calling you to ministry. I'm calling you to pastor. I'm calling you to preach. And we get so desperate at times as individuals to just move forward because we're tired of where we're standing. That I've made changes without hearing him to give me directions. So I just take off. Sometimes we need to be patient and wait. We can stand this morning. We're going to leave this fairly heavy today, and we're going to pick up on this next Sunday. We're going to talk about the wilderness experience and the value, how God uses the wilderness of our lives to shape us and mold us, and we can only reach the level of purification that he wants us to reach in the wilderness. We have to wait for his voice, wait for him to guide our steps. Just as the Israelites in the wilderness, listen, I found myself begging God. I said, God, if you can do it for Israel, you can do it for me. Lord, give me a cloud by day and give me a fire by night to follow. God, I want to do what's right. I'm tired of being tired. I'm tired of life just beating me down when I'm trying so hard to keep my head above water. I know I'm not the only one here today that this is relating to. I know that there are people here right now that are in the exact same situation. Be still before the Lord. And wait patiently for him. See, sometimes we look for God to talk to us in the loud, God, speak to me. The old prophet said, I heard the wind, I heard the thunder, I heard the lightning, the earthquakes. I hear all of this yelling, I hear all of this noise. But God is speaking in a still, small voice. And he's saying today, wait on me. Wait on me. Give me a chance. You want to stop that level of discontent in your life? It's a heart issue. It starts at the cross. As our worship team, I ask them to sing the song, Wait on the Lord. And as they begin to sing this song, I want to invite you this morning to come down to this altar. Say, God, my life high level of discontent. I'm struggling, God. Help me, Lord. Help me, God. Help me, Lord, to find that level of contentment that's only found in you. God bless you this morning.